Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. About music with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
I'm welcome to Snacky Tunes. I am one half your host, Greg Bresnitz, sitting in Mitte, in the upstairs apartment of the Cordoba.
The way you put it is...
Blasé. Yeah.
Who knows where Mitte is in New York?
I think people know where Mitte is. Yeah. I mean, it's Mitte is...
It's a Vienna Mitte?
Oh, well, I mean, considering the fact that this is a string of German interviews, I think it kind
it's
of...
It's next to Kreuzberg, if anybody...
Oh, yeah, it's
hipster.
Neukölln, Kreuzberg, Mitte, is that the...
What?
The line of falling apart.
Mitte,
falling apart.
I don't know.
Do you want to go around the room and introduce yourselves?
Start with the oldest or with the youngest?
The youngest.
Yeah.
The most handsome.
My name is Lucas Moratz. I'm the head chef. I'm the head chef since day one, since 3 years now, almost. Almost 3 years. I'm from Vienna. I'm 25 years old, and I've been cooking all my life, I guess. And anything else? I'm a very handsome man because you can't see me right now.
I'm Willy Schlögl. I'm from Styria. It's the region where Arnold Schwarzenegger is from, and I'm the sommelier and host in the Cordoba.
I'm Christoph Ellinghaus. I am the oldest and the best looking of this lot. I simply look stunning. People say I look great, but I would say I look stunning.
It's nice how you can lie on the radio. It's nice how you can lie.
It's radio, people. Yeah. You don't know.
I have a face for radio. It's absolutely perfect. Let's start with you and your background in cooking. I know you come from a family of culinary masters.
Yeah.
So what is it, starting with your father as well, too?
Yeah, I think my great-grandfather had already a coffee. My my grandfather was a chef who opened a restaurant with my father 25 years ago.
What was it called?
It's called Moratz & Son.
Okay.
So my granddad is, my back name is Murat, so it's Moratz & Son, which was my father. And now he took over. He just got his second Michelin star. He's like just one of those workaholics and a very good chef. And I've been working always outside of Vienna, actually. I think with my 17th, I left to France, and then I went to Holland and Germany, and then for a short period back to Vienna. And now I'm in Berlin, but everybody in my family is cooking or waiting.
were there any like kind of lessons from youth from your grandfather or father that you still kind of carry with you in the way that you approach food and the way that you cook?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think like the taste is like something I learned, like, you know, when you eat always the food of your father or grandfather, or whatever, like my taste is very, how would you say that, influenced or like brought up through my family. So
informed.
Like informed. So it's, I mean, it's just something like learning to talk, you know. It was always about food, you know, so like your surrounding is like, that's just how it came. So of course, like, how I taste is definitely totally from my family, and anything else, like, you just learn, but the taste is not changing, I think, so. But, like, there's way too many lessons from my family, of course.
And then for you, I mean, how did you kind of get into wine, and what was your kind of discovery on that path? Have you always been in food?
Yeah, I grew up in a restaurant, which was very good stuff with wine, I would say. And then I went to school with a few crazy guys. They've also had some wine bars and wine restaurants at home, and the interest was very early in wine. So we started then with a sommelier course in school when I was 16, and then I went on with the WECT, the Wines and Spirit Education Trust, when I was 19, and then I did the exam of the certified sommelier
at the first time.
Yeah.
Okay. Well done.
The Court of Master Sommelier, and yeah. And then it became more fun than learning by doing it.
Mm. Yeah. And then you, Christoph, with the most culinary experience out of everyone.
Yeah. I had a placement. It was funny when Willy and I started to look for wine like locations. When we had this idea of we wanted to open up a wine bar in Berlin, we actually went, and I didn't know him. Well.
Yeah, the story of how you two met is really good.
Why he passed on the first time with the sommelier. We went to one bar that we looked at. He's like, "Hey, there's another wine bar we should check out." and someone gave him a 76 Bordeaux something and blind, and like, taste this. And he just took it and sniffed it and swilled it and said, I would say mid-70s, I'd say Bordeaux, I would say the right shore of the river, and I would probably guess. And it was all... It was, everything was right.
Yeah.
he just lucky nailed
day.
It.
Was yeah, a lucky yeah. day.
It was a lucky day. And he just nailed it. And I said, all right, then, okay.
And he took you to the wine bar. So he probably wanted to impress you. Talked yeah. to so many
times. No, I suggested to go to that wine bar.
It was the first and only yeah. time I made the wine. To be honest.
I need to impress my boss. You should open the wine, please.
A, we weren't really boss or something like that at that time. And B, it was good. He nailed it. Come on, you have a lucky day.
Well, that's good. Yeah.
And I was very impressed. I thought, that guy should be running a wine bar.
After having that thought, there's a fourth partner. Like, the story is really amazing, and also the name and the meaning of the bar is
okay. So these two are obviously Austrians, and I'm German, and I've been interested in wine for some years now, and I've sort of fallen in love with Austrian wine some 5, 6, 7 years ago, longer even. And so I never really paid much attention to the classics. So everybody who works in wine will tell you Bordeaux and Burgundy, that's the shit. And I was just so happy with my little stuff from Burgenland and, you know, Styria and whatever. That was enough for me. And so I wanted a wine bar that reflected that taste. Me being German, I mean, let's do something German-Austrian. And that's what we did. That's kind of what we did. So there's these two Austrian clowns and... And then there's, there's actually one more Austrian clown who was instrumental in getting us all together, who lives near Hamburg.
And how did he connect the three of you?
Well, he knew Willy, and Willy knew Lucas, and it's just a circle jerk.
Austria is one big family, you know?
Yeah. And then, you had no culinary experience besides drinking and eating before?
And eating wasn't even playing much of a role.
Yeah, really. Just drinking.
It was drinking.
Just drinking.
Yes.
So, kind of, where did the inspiration and, you know, where did the kind of thought to be like, let's open up a wine bar?
It was missing.
Yeah.
It was simply missing. We went to a show, Radiohead, I think it was, and that we wanted to get a good bottle of wine after this great show. And we failed. We fell flat. And so we just... that's when the idea came up that we kind of need a place that is... You know, 11 midnight, you can still get a good... literally, 10 years ago, you could not find... or 5 years ago, even. I don't think you could find a great bottle of wine in a surrounding that isn't Michelin-star restaurant in Berlin at midnight. So there was a need for it.
And where does the name come from?
Oh, well, there's a, what, you know, so, okay, so you people in the U.S. might not know this, but there's a little sport called football, not American
story of
football.
Success.
And so Austria is like Canada to you, the little brother, you know, nearby. And so Austria and Germany met in Argentina in a city called Cordoba, and they played football, and Austria kicked German out of the competition in a World Cup. The defending champion, Germany, poof, got sent home by Austria, the little brother from down south. So this is a big deal to the Austrians. And it was
the only time they ever won against Germany in a competition.
Probably. And then they never got back to go to another World Cup. So they sit at home and watch that game in a replay when others go on to World Cups. So it became famous as the shame of Cordoba from a German point of view and the miracle of Cordoba from a Austrian point of view. And when my Austrian partner Gerhard, who I've been running around Berlin asking people to open up a wine bar with me because I had no experience, and they all went, nah, not interested. This guy was not only interested, he replied, yes, a German-Austrian wine bar, and we'll call it Cordoba. And I was like, dang, that's the spirit. That's it right there. That's you've nailed it, you know. And so he, not only does he have culinary, he's been sommelier of the year, you know, and he's just like a super connected, great guy. who knows people. And he, you know, he had him in his restaurant at the time. And
really, who are you pointing to?
Yeah. Oh, this is
on radio.
Billy, so Billy, the Buddy Holly lookalike that came out of his kitchen going like, what is it? He was wearing different glasses then. This is more porn industry. Back then it was more like, you know.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick musical break, and then we're going to talk about the restaurant, the food program, the wine program, and the vibe. We'll be right back on Snacky Tunes.
So quiet in my room, I got the darkest view tonight. Looking out my window at the tears rolling down the hillside. Down the hillside. Neighbors got the radio. Playing a song like a single on repeat. You're stuck in my head tonight. You're stuck in my head tonight. I'm trying so hard to sing another song. If I could turn back time, I'd do it all the same. I lost my heart, I lost my brain that first night. I fall in love so fast, it's just life. Like a high bird flies, you are my love, you are. And when you left, I thought I'd die at the sight of your back fade into black in the night, the night, the night. I'm trying so hard to sing another song. Tonight, tonight, tonight. And the day went away, I felt just like a stray, singing blue tunes in an alleyway, playing our song, playing our song, playing our song.
So let's talk about the food. It seems that like the menu is alive and it's kind of ever changing. You know, what is your, or what has been your approach since from the beginning, and you know, how does it continue to evolve the food that you're putting out?
Well, I think it was never planned to be food at Cordoba, because it was supposed to be a wine bar, and so they were very conscious about not making it again one of those Michelin star restaurants, the only ones where you can drink wine after Radiohead. So we started very basic with like ham and cheese and stuff, but after a month I think I realized, I said, because it's, we have quite a big place, you know, it's like, I mean, for a wine bar at least, it's 70 seats.
62.
So it's 66 seats, which is quite a lot for a wine bar, for like for 8 hours to get full. So we just kind of got a little bit more foodie after a month, I think, and just...
What do you mean after a month? You started with a full menu.
Yeah, but it was just like little bits and bobs.
You don't, that's not a menu. It was food on the menu.
It looked exactly like today's menu. There was cold snacks, warm snacks, sweet stuff, and it was from day one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because everybody just can order whatever he wants. We always have vegetarian, fish, and meat options, obviously. I think it's quite creative for a wine bar, I would say. It's nothing too usual. I was never really a fan of, like, just choosing for one kind of type, like being like, oh, we're Nordic now, or we're doing this, or we're doing that, or we only get regional stuff or that. So we just do everything, you know, which gives you a million of possibilities, you know, if you... I mean, it's good if you put yourself like in a circle, but we never have done this. So we have from Asian flavors to Nordic, whatever. We just do everything, you know. And we change the menu also quite often, I think, like 3-4 dishes a week. It's 20 dishes on the menu.
And what kind of, you know, and we'll get to the wine selection, but does like the wine lead the food? Does the food lead the wine? Or like how do the two kind of worlds intersect?
They don't. The concept is they don't match.
They work against each other.
I mean,
diametrically opposed. Yes.
Contradiction.
I think like it's just, I think once we had like one winemaker downstairs, it was Keller, I think. And
it was
Pity. Pity maybe. I think it was Keller actually at one try, and he was like saying like, this is crazy, like you're one of the most famous wine bar, but no wine ever fits to the food. But still, both of it is really great, you know. So this is kind of like, I don't know, when I go eat, I can't focus on both of it. So if I go eat, I'm going to eat my plate and focus on that. And there's no place for me to like try the wine next to it. So I drink and eat. So I think this is how we just always have been doing it. And
I think it was part of the concept as
I think
well.
So
because
too.
If you would like to have corresponding wines to the food, you can go to a Michelin... star restaurant, and so it was like having
matching
fun.
Wine and food is old school.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, you are the first that I have ever interviewed that has kind of had that concept. So, like, as someone with your extensive knowledge, where like you are both deep in encyclopedias and you know like the notes of, you know, this wine, the notes of this food. Do you have to like go out of your way to not bring them together, or do you just...
No, that's why it works.
Oh.
That's why they have the fund, both have a fundamental understanding. There's never been much of this thought process. It's not there's no concept here. That's the first thing you have to understand. There is no concept.
But everybody's telling us that we have a great concept.
Yeah. we're getting awards for the concept, right and center, yet we've never even, you know, and at some point we realized we're so without a concept, the wines and the food don't actually match. We had a tasting of supremely amazing Pinot Noirs upstairs here in the tasting room, in our private dining lounge. We did Pinot Noirs all the way back to I don't know what, and Lucas sent a course of food that just ruined the entire tasting. And people were, because he didn't know what was going on up here. And it was amazing. I mean, people loved it, but it killed, you know, it almost killed the whole thing.
As an outsider, let me ask, like, how much does it really ruin? Like, if, let's say, enjoyment is 100%.
Bärlauch, what's Bärlauch in
Remsen. Remsen, it's a wild garlic, basically.
So, you know, when you send a course that is super heavy on wild garlic, well, like a lamb wrapped in...
Lamb neck wrapped in Remsen with goat's butter.
Go taste some wine for the next 15 minutes. You'll be surprised how the wine
is
losing out.
The people are probably happy that they have a break for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
He's like Jesus, but in a different way.
Yeah. But then the food
makes
was just so mind-blowingly great that you were like, okay, this is amazing, you know.
So since you have like total independence from the food, I mean, how do you go about, you know, selecting your wines, like what is your, you know, featuring it, and, you know, what is it, you know, exciting to you, and, you know, kind of the German wine scene in 2016?
Depressing.
I think why is this working? Because everybody's just always have been doing what he really likes. Like wine concept wise, you bought the wines you guys really loved.
It was great. We got together and we made a list of winemakers, and it was completely and utterly complementary. To the point where I said this, then Willie added that, 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 and they made the perfect sense. Region-wise, from philosophy, from where they come from, almost everything was like, and then, and I think that's to me is the biggest pride is that you can walk in here and you can drink a glass of wine for €4, and I think people in New York don't even know a glass for €4.
Yeah.
So you can come in here and drink and get a glass of €4.50 or something, and it'll be great accordingly to the price, but it'll be great. And then you can go and spend €450 on a bottle if you like, and it might be great. But there's never been a bad glass of wine poured in this place. That's the idea.
And that's the concept in quotes. Yeah.
But I think this is also like when you have this price arrangement, what is really nice in our place is like that we have such a mixed crowd. This is what makes me the most proud on the place, you know? Like often you go to a place like, for example, in Neukölln, and you just have like all those people who don't really have any knowledge about it. It's just a really cool place, so they all run there, you know? And I feel like here it's like, yeah, from really young guys, like not under 18, obviously, but somewhere around there until like 60 years, 70 years old. It's a really nice mix, is what I really like about a restaurant, because it gives you also a really nice atmosphere.
So, I mean, so it's been 5 years, you know, how have you seen kind of the wine, since you were like one of the first to do this, how have you seen it evolve? Have you seen other wine bars pop up? Have you seen people try to kind of recapture what you've done here? How has the landscape changed in the last 5 years?
Oh yes, that happened.
There's a lot going on. Wine's becoming more and more of a thing. Wine didn't matter at all. Most people, when I run around and say, hey, you want to open up a wine bar with me? They're like, look, Germans, they don't drink wine. If Germans drink wine, it's bad crap from Italy or France. It's shit. You don't want it. And basing a bar concept around those features, when Germans really just want
beer,
and you want it to be Austrian and Italian and German, and most Germans don't even know there is such a thing as Austrian wine. Honestly, get lost.
Yeah.
That's the reaction I got. So, having done that and having been swept to the top really fast.
So what were early days like before we get to current thing? Like
2013?
Yeah, like with like the first year, did people like poke their heads in? Were you able to pull from like your background?
From day one, we were like all the winemakers came for a party and they all went back home and said, oh, what a place! and then it was just, we became the box to tick. If you're interested in wine and you went to Berlin, we became the box to tick really fast,
right,
really quick. I don't know how it happened, but it happened. It happened like that.
I mean,
other places,
have extensive connections in the music industry and people.
But it's not so much of the music industry. It was culinary. It was like the industry. It was the chefs. It was the sommeliers from other restaurants. You know, people from the restaurants closed up their kitchen, came in for another drop. I mean, it was also the first. When were you able to not close at 5 a.m.? After half a year? I don't know. Like this is like the Berghain of wine bars. Never close.
Cool.
And Willy was looking good at the time.
I think, I think there's way more wine bars now.
Yeah.
Totally. Like, wine bars have been opening, concepts have been copied also quite often, I guess. Which
now
is
they
fine.
Have concept.
Yeah.
So there's natural wine bars.
And there's another natural wine. Yeah.
We never said we want to be a natural wine bar. I think we have the best natural wines in Berlin.
Yeah.
And the best selection.
Boom.
And there's natural wine bars. They all have
which
the same.
Which just exist because it's really cool to have a natural wine bar.
Yeah.
You know, they don't even have any knowledge about wine or good wine because there's a lot of terrible natural wine as well.
And they buy from one natural wine dealer. So they all have the same natural wines, and there's now a couple of bars, and it's good. I mean, it's good if it makes people more sensitive to the topic of wine and natural wine, I think that's all good. That all plays into our cards. They'll end up here at some point.
Yeah, they'll kind of shift out. So what is like kind of the one thing that you feel like people get, since like, you know, they say they just buy natural wine and bad wine, like what is the one thing you think that people get wrong about wine, or maybe even more specific about German and Austrian wine that they might have like a misconception about?
There's a lot of things people get wrong about German wine. So people in your neck of the woods, people think German wine is all about sweet Riesling, which is, and there's amazing sweet Riesling and there's really terrible sweet Riesling, and there is all that, but there's a ton of other stuff. And that Riesling actually, like in the top notch quality of Riesling, can become
if you get the right winemaker and the right year and the right grow, it beats it in complexity and depth and amazement. It can compete with any fine Burgundy for like a fraction of the price. So that's one great thing that people don't really think and know. And in Austria, there's a lot more going on than in Germany in terms of.
So what was the question again?
Interesting.
Misconceptions about
German-Austrian
wine.
I think Austria isn't existing in the international wine market. So there's low.
It does for the
Austria is less than 2% of export in the international market, so nobody knows about Austrian wines. Mm. There are a few New Yorker because of Aldo Sohm and Le Bernardin wine bar, because he's doing a lot for Austrian wines, or the Waldsee in New York, but nobody talks about Austrian wines, I guess. But there's a lot going on with native grapes as Blaufränkisch, Zweigel and Grüner Veltliner, things like that. And they're becoming better and better. And after the big wine scandal in 86, the quality increased a lot. So,
kind of last question, what is on the horizon or what is kind of coming next for this? Just more wine not paired with food? Any other kind of like things that people can be excited about or keep their eyes open for?
I've just found an Israeli artist who I think is the shit. I'm going to focus on my record label for a while and let these guys do some arm wrestling, and then whoever wins gets to do the next concept.
Oh, perfect.
Without much of a concept.
Yeah. Without a concept.
No, we have some ideas, but it's kind of too early to talk about, really.
Fine.
I think.
Well, I want to thank you for making time. I know there's a football match that needs to be attended to, but where can people find you? Website, Instagram, I don't know.
www.cordobar.net/en is for English, right away. Or
single woman on Willy Schlögl's Facebook site.
Facebook Willy Schlögl
works perfect.
So put a ring on it. .at
yeah.
All right,
on Instagram. I would just like to say hello to Roberta's, and I love that place. Really,
yes.
You need to tell them that it was one of the best pizzas I ever had.
I will absolutely let them know. And then, you said Instagram as well?
Yeah.
Strong Instagram game? Strongish. alright, well, we're going to take a quick musical break, and we'll be back with the second part of Snacky Tunes.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. In our industrial world, most wines have become brands, but the wines I love are so much more. Fine wine is a civilizing substance that connects us to nature. It cannot be stamped out in a factory. If you're listening to this great show, you probably eat different. I urge you to drink different too. Go deeper. Cane5.com. Thank you.
You heard it, right? What is that instrument again?
The vibraslap.
The vibraslap, yeah. It's like well placed in that song. Like maybe they use it like once or twice, but they really just save it right for the end.
Yeah, save the best for last.
Yeah. I am one half your host, Snacky Tunes, Greg Brusnitz. We have Heidemann, a.k.a. Monica H., live in studio. Thanks. Big shout out to Andrew J6. As he is
Andrew
in our
from
phone.
J6.
Andrew from J6. I don't even know if he associates that, but that's how he is in our phone.
Yeah, we both realized we both have him in our phone that way.
Yeah.
Many bands ago.
Many bands ago. Speaking of many bands ago, you've had many, many bands.
I have.
You want to rattle off some of the former projects?
Currently, I have this project, and then I also play synth in the Juan McLean, and also... Hess is more a great band from Denmark and also half the time in New York. I was in a pop band called Xylos where I was singing, and then before that I had kind of a solo kind of proggy jazzy rock thing under my own name once again.
So you started 10 years ago, you were saying, with your own name project, and now you've dropped the first name, and you're just going by a last name.
Mm-hmm.
What was the decision to, or is there any tie between the former project and the current project, or is it just in name only?
Just in name. You know, my cells regenerated, so I got a new name.
Let's just talk about Juan McLean for like half a second.
Yeah.
Because I saw you play at what is now... another defunct venue, Cameo.
Oh, yeah.
That show was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Which one did you go to? The last one or one of the first ones?
The last one.
Oh, great.
I was out sick and was like, I will just like try to make it for the second one. It was great. That new record is great, and the band put together is awesome.
Yeah, it's been great playing with them.
So let's talk about the current project and how do, you know, the songs kind of come together. Like, where do you pull the inspiration from for this, kind of given 10 years of synth playing and your history?
Well, I think it really came from playing in bands for so long, and I never really got to create things on my own, mm-hmm. Either out of thinking that I couldn't or just not wanting to or not even thinking about it, really. And I think after... What's that?
I was going to say, why did you think you couldn't?
I think because at the time I wasn't, like, super into electronic stuff or production, and I was just more like, oh, I'm a singer. And I like synths, but, like, I was more focused on, like, being a singer, I guess, and, like, writing songs, and I would write with bass or bass synth a lot, and, like, have a lot of make connections with like harmony and bass lines and melody and stuff, but I never got into the technical aspects of it until I kind of decided that I wanted to. And it, of course, there's like a learning curve involved to get past the technical stuff, but I just kind of like broke my brain against it for a couple years.
It's amazing.
Still am. But yeah.
But it's amazing how people feel like, you know, I'm too old or
right.
I can't do that. And then you just kind of put like one little small foot in front of the other. And you're like, oh, I learned this synth or I learned this like arpeggiator or like anything. So,
yeah, I think also, I mean, I've always like loved synths since I was a child. And I just never... They kind of intimidated me, to be honest. Like, once I actually had, like, a real one in front of me.
What was the first one that you kind of broke your head against but felt that you mastered?
The first synth that I got was the Korg Poly 800, which actually isn't, like, the easiest synth to really learn as far as synths.
Like, you started on medium.
Yeah. It was, like, a relatively inexpensive inexpensive synth, but... To program that is sort of a huge pain in the ass, and it's not a very good synth to mess with in a live setting. It's more of those kind of synths that you just find your sound and like hope and then go with that for whatever song. I mean, unless you mod it and get all crazy with that, but I haven't done that yet.
I mean, there's still more to learn.
It seems endless.
Yeah.
And there's the whole modular world, which is really... like taking off and has taken off. And
how did you teach yourself, or where did you start?
I had, you know, some friends. I would ask them things and annoy the shit out of them, and I literally like couldn't understand it. Like there was like certain concepts of it just like would not integrate themselves in my brain. And I was just like, oh my God, why can't I learn this? And I felt really stupid. And then like, I just would remember just like staring at a synth and like then all of a sudden like this thing just like opens up in your brain and it's like this huge epiphany on like how it works. And you're like, oh my God, I can get this now. And then there's like another thing, another layer, and it keeps like going and going.
Can we hear a song?
Sure.
See how effortless that was?
Yeah.
what are you going to play for us first?
I'm going to play a song off my newish EP. It's called So In Love. I'm So In Love. Keep here often, just to break the glass. Threw it against the wall and I fell. Relief. You said you were a good guy, said you wanted a prize, but I'm an honest alias and I don't hold back, don't hold back. I'm so in love with myself, I know you know what it's like, I just do what I want. I'm so in love with myself, I know you know what it's
So you mentioned that you have loved synths since childhood. Mm-hmm. What is it that grabbed you about them before, you know, you loved them before you understood them?
Yes. What was it? I just knew.
What was it that spoke to you?
I don't really know. It's just the sound, you know, like a sound just gets to you. And I think a lot of it, like, I watched a lot of music videos when I was a kid from the 80s, and like, I used to like have to watch like the MTV top 10 video countdown, like at the end of the week, every week. And you know, at the time there's like all these bands with synths and a lot of like DX7s and Casios and stuff, and there was just something about the sound. And I just remember like wanting one so badly for Christmas, and I was taking piano lessons and when I was a kid, and I was like, oh, I want like a Casio for, you know, for some reason that was like the name that stood out from some music video. And I remember my dad got me a Casio, but it was like one of those kind of like Casio tone, like with like the program beats. And
I think we still have one in our attic.
Yeah. Still have mine,
yeah,
too,
just like
in
very,
my dad's,
yeah,
attic. But I remember
where
being
all Casio
really
tones
bummed
go
out
to die.
Yeah, no, I remember like even in fourth grade being like playing it and like being like, that's not the sound that I want. Like I wanted like waves and stuff. I wanted like sawtooths and square, and you know,
yes, totally.
But I didn't know that I wanted that. But
right.
I just remember like being like, oh, electric piano. Like this is not what
like
I wanted.
Was like the rumba beat.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, tango, rumba,
salsa,
two-step.
Yeah, just you're like, this is not what I envisioned. This,
yeah,
would be.
No, not at all. And I just remember being like, and I didn't understand why I was so bummed, because I was just, cause I didn't have anyone else. My parents are like, I mean, they were into music, but they're like into kind of classical music, and they're like immigrants and didn't like, weren't exposed to, you know, rock that much or pop, you know.
Who were some of the bands that influenced you kind of early on?
Pretty much just pop bands, nothing too obscure. I think like my favorite albums were like Cyndi Lauper, She's So Unusual. That was like a big one. Madonna, pretty classic.
I know. Sorry for the distraction. There's a huge surprise birthday party going on in the background.
Simultaneously.
You're doing, I mean,
they're not clapping for
me. They're like, Madonna,
yes. My childhood choices.
Cyndi Lauper, oh my God.
I agree.
Oh, yes, of course. She was amazing. She got robbed that Friday. Should've been number one.
Seriously, most underrated pop star.
Can we hear another song?
Sure.
What are you going to play for us this time?
This one is called Swords, and it's from my first EP called Orphan.
Everyone knows it will destroy you.
So EP came out earlier this spring.
Yes, in April.
Congratulations.
The second one, yeah.
What's up for, I guess summer's almost done. So I guess what's up for the fall? Man, that's like heartbreaking that summer's almost done.
I know, like got all of a sudden cold. Not cold, but like, you know, a balmy 80.
Yeah.
this week, and you can kind of feel the
cold. Yeah, you can feel
the fall
like,
creeping in.
Yeah. That's okay. How's your fall clothing game?
Well, I'm going to LA. I'm going to try and keep it. Keep it alive. Keeping summer alive.
Like, I refuse to pack any jackets. It's just shorts.
Yes.
Tank tops.
Exactly.
So, LA, any shows coming up?
Yeah, actually, I have one at Come On Everybody.
Oh, amazing.
When? September 1st.
Oh, perfect.
So, yeah.
Great.
You should come.
Yeah, of course. Who else is playing?
My friend is playing, she goes by the name Trash Magnolia. She's it's kind of like electronic, bouncy New Orleans, but not jazzy,
yeah.
But electronic with a trashy
okay.
overtones.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
That sounds like really, that actually sounds really
fun. Yeah, she's an old friend of mine and she's amazing. So
is she from New Orleans? Or?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Good to know. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, we'll make sure we have time for one more song. Where can people find your two EPs? Where can they find you on
the usuals?
The usual
places. I mean, if you want a physical copy, you can go to Bandcamp, but, you know, Spotify, iTunes, etc.
Can we talk about Bandcamp for a second?
Yeah, yeah.
They are great.
Thank you. I love them.
Yeah. They are, I feel like, super underrated.
Yeah.
But I feel they probably more than most have done a really good job for making a lot of the bands that we book on here, like, direct kind of, like, access to them and to learn their music and discover a lot of stuff.
Yeah, no, it's great. And, like, for, you know, like, people don't really buy physical stuff anymore, but, like, for an online store for that kind of thing. And if you don't have some major distributor doing that for you, and it's like amazing
because yeah.
you know, you just go direct, and
it's awesome. And there's also a lot of bands that do fun stuff, like people sell cassettes. You get the digital and you get the cassette.
Yeah,
but I don't know, I don't have a cassette player, but you know.
Oh, you don't?
No,
I have a couple I can give you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I might have one. It might be in the Casio, next to Casio.
Oh,
the
yeah,
attic.
It's probably in the
probably.
Same.
Probably in like the same kind of like...
Same department.
Yeah,
in
the
your
same
attic.
The same sad place of departed electronics that went for the 80s. Well, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, yeah.
Big shout out to the Codobar guys. Thank you to Mr. Andrew Raposo, wherever he might be. Shout out to the family, to Meatball, to Ornella. Thanks to Pierre for stepping in today. It was great, man. Dave, hope you had a good time in Philly. We will be back next week with another episode of Snacky Tunes. What's the name of the last song you're going to play for us?
This one's called My Pet, and it's on the new EP that just came out.
Okay. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next week. Checking you out.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.
Listening.